Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
As industries go, healthcare is not the most transparent. Pricing of services often has the feel of a Turkish bazaar. Unfortunately, this carries over to physicians negotiating employment contracts. What is fair compensation? What are key points to look for in leadership employment agreements? The questions go on and on. Never fear. Today, we hear from an expert with many years of experience helping physicians negotiate employment agreements. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Kyle Clausen. Mr. Clausen is a nationally known attorney. He specializes in physician employment contracts and compensation. Kyle routinely advises physicians on legal, financial, and strategic aspects of their employment agreements. Kyle Clausen, welcome to Sound Practice.
I appreciate you having me on.
It's our pleasure. So, Kyle, how did you become interested in the area of physician employment agreements?
Well, it's a pretty, it's a niche within a niche, right, of healthcare law. And so I don't think anybody goes to law school thinking that this is what their practice is going to be. But my wife is a physician, and I was fortunate enough while she was in training to meet and become acquainted with the founder of Resolve. And so that's how I got started in this. And it's been, a great career for me, and something that we're extremely passionate about. Obviously, with spouse being in the industry, getting to see a lot of that stuff up close and personal. It wasn't my plan from childhood, but here we are.
I understand. Now, you mentioned Resolve. What is Resolve? What products and services do you help physicians with?
Yeah, so Resolve is a tech platform, kind of tech-enabled services where we help physicians understand fair market value, compensation data, and also connect them with expert legal guidance and attorneys to make sure that as they're going through their employment contracts or partnership agreements, renegotiations, right, throughout their career, that they've got good advice and good access to information from a very national perspective. We work in all 50 states and all specialties. And so a lot of times that market view is really important when, you're dealing with large health systems and things like that.
Excellent. So as you might imagine, since this is the podcast of the American Association for Physician Leadership, there are any number of mid-career physicians in our audience today. And I'm sure that many of them are wondering about compensation when looking at new positions. Can you give some thoughts and advice on that to them?
Yeah, well, we know as attorneys, the words fair market value, right, and commercial reasonableness, and those types of things are important, and have a lot of weight. And we know that systems want to comply with those rules and regulations. And we also know that there's not a set number, right? Fair market value is a range, right? And we're negotiating between two parties at arm's length. And so anybody who's mid-career, and anybody coming out of training, I mean, I guess it applies to everyone, but you want to make sure you know what your value is. And you want to know what, your colleagues who are doing similar procedures and seeing similar patient volumes are being paid. And that varies quite a bit by region, by specialty, obviously. I think it's just really important, regardless of where you're at in your career, to make sure you're aware of that. So you go into a negotiation in good faith, right, with good information to back up any ask that you're going to make.
Do you see health systems often telling physicians, oh, we'd love to compensate you at a higher level, but we just can't because of some federal laws out there and whatnot. And this is, it'd be illegal for us to do that. Do you see that come up in negotiations?
We do hear that. And I think, clients and physicians hear that early on in the process sometimes, is that, we've done a study or we've taken a look at comp and we know that this is within fair market value, is usually how it's framed. It's not that we can't go higher, but we've been told that this is okay, right? And this is compliant. And so we don't disagree with that necessarily. And that's what I think, there's a range of fair market value, but it doesn't mean that you can't ask for more. We know it's extremely difficult to recruit and retain physicians. We know it's very expensive to do that. And so it's usually to both parties' benefit to keep somebody who's good, right, and who has a full patient panel in place, rather than going out and losing revenue for a few months and, you know, then having to bring somebody up to speed, you know, new in the system.
I think that makes sense. Let's talk a little bit about leadership. How are leadership positions for physicians typically compensated?
Well, it depends on how much of their FTE status is dedicated towards, you know, administrative things. Right? I mean, there's certainly some physicians who are, you know, now CEOs of hospitals or doing a CMO, you know, role full time. There are then, you know, take it back a step where it might be a fractional CMO role, or it might be that you're a medical director. And so I think it just depends on, you know, how much of your day is allocated towards those things. But certainly you want to make sure you're being paid fairly for both roles, right? Because, you know, there's data sets out there. And this is one of the things that, you know, we do with clients is we're going to analyze if you're 20% an admin, right? Here's the admin rate. If you're 80% cardiology and you're seeing patients all day, right? Here's the rate for that. And making sure that that's bifurcated and weighted appropriately. And so it's a long-winded way of saying it depends, right? But usually it's more of a either stipend or by the hour for administrative and leadership type roles. And then it's usually going to be based on collections or work RVUs, you know, for the patient facing time.
You bring up RVUs, and so many physicians now are compensated in that way. I'm always concerned that physicians don't have a way to check if they're being assigned the appropriate number of RVUs. It becomes an accounting issue, does it not? And how do you help people with that?
Yeah, you almost have to keep a second set of books, right, to some extent, because every CPT code that you're entering, right, every patient encounter has a corresponding work RVU value. And so it's the system's job or your employer's job, and it could be a private practice as well, to translate that and to say, yes, for those 30 patients today, this is the number of work RVUs that you generated for that. And most bonus structures are set up to look at a threshold on either a quarterly or an annual basis to say, if you've gone above and beyond what we expect, here's your bonus at a certain rate. And so we have had situations where clients have felt like, you know, boy, my patient encounters are where they should be, right? They're at the median, but for some reason, my work RVUs are at like 30th percentile. Why is there a 20% gap there? And then, like you said, it's an accounting issue. And so you have to go back and actually look at what happened every day and to see if their correct values are being, you know, allocated appropriately.
Let's get back to leadership. Unfortunately, there are some liabilities that come along with leadership positions. Can you talk about what those are and maybe how physicians should address these liabilities?
Yeah, when we think about professional liability, you know, for most physicians, it's your malpractice insurance, right? And it's the taking a look at what you're doing with patients. If you're in a leadership position, and depending on what type of leadership position, you know, you've got organizational risk, you know, then as well. And so most institutions, whether you're in healthcare or otherwise, there's different types of insurance policies, some E&O policies that you would expect to be in place to cover you for those actions. And so what we advise clients is just making sure that when we get to that part of the contract and we're talking about insurances and risk, that if there are those administrative pieces, that the coverage is sufficient. And for medical directorships, you know, sometimes they can bake that into their typical malpractice policy. If you're a C-suite member, you know, usually it's a separate insurance policy that's there to cover you.
And you're able to help your clients determine the appropriate amount of coverage and so forth?
Yeah, correct. So the different states, right, have different limits and tort rules and things like that. So yes, oftentimes organizations have, you know, they have group insurance policies, and so the rates are going to be set, and they want to be compliant as well. So most of the time, coverage limits are not an issue, but you certainly want to make sure you know what your coverage limits are and that, you know, that you're double checking. It's kind of the trust and verify, you know, type of analogy.
That makes sense. Kyle, as you know, physician employment agreements have traditionally contained non-compete clauses. And recently, we've seen at both the state and the federal level a move to prohibit non-compete agreements. Of course, this triggered some pushback. What's the latest update on non-competes in the physician space?
Yeah, well, we don't like them. That's the personal update. Yeah, so the FTC
non-compete bad. Yeah.
Yeah, that's as simple as it gets. No. But yeah, so the FTC, you know, leaned in on this and tried to do away with them on a federal level. That certainly would have been great for every physician that was out there, heavily discussed in those, you know, opinions. But at this point in time, that's stuck in the court system. And so we don't have a general rule yet at the federal level on whether or not that's going to go through. So the long and the short of that means every state gets to control whether or not these are applicable. And some states have done away with them for physicians specifically. You know, California is the kind of the big example on that one, and it's been there for a while. But most states, the majority rule is if they're reasonable, right, they're going to be enforceable. And so that puts physicians in a tough spot, I think, because knowing what's reasonable requires, you know, a judge to come in and say yes or no to it. And every specialty is different. Every location, whether it's metro or rural, is going to be different. Timings can change. Geographic scope can change. And so our preference is that if you can't remove it entirely, which would be the best answer, you need to make sure it fits your situation. And so some people and clients of ours will take, you know, a job, and let's say it's, you know, Midwest somewhere, let's say it's in Iowa, knowing that they're from Florida. And if this doesn't work out, we're moving back to Florida, right? Well, in that setting, the non-compete doesn't become much of an issue for you because there's really not a lot of risk. But if you're like a lot of our other clients and you're moving back to hometown and you're moving to Charlotte, and there's only two practices that fit your specialty in Charlotte, well, that non-compete might be the most important thing to you in the entire document. So I think the weight of those really depends on the fact pattern and what the client needs.
You mentioned how difficult it is now for organizations to recruit physicians. Does that help in the negotiations on non-competes?
Well, I think certainly. I think it helps on everything. I mean, if the organization is honest, right, with themselves, they usually don't have multiple candidates, right, knocking down their door for a position. There are certain markets where that might be true, but the general rule is that that's not the case. And so, you know, the best organizations are, and the ones that are going to attract and retain the most physicians, are the ones that are going to be flexible in their contract, that aren't going to try to, you know, slam a standard agreement down everybody's, you know, file, so to speak, and make the adjustments that are appropriate. Because I think if you do that, you're going to end up with happier employees, right, that are likely to stay longer.
Outside of the non-compete agreements that we've been discussing, what type of items should physicians look for when reviewing their contracts?
Yeah, well, if you think about other exit pieces, we talked on insurance, the non-competes. You want to make sure you know how you get in and out of the contract. So the termination provisions we think are awfully important. Many folks that are transitioning, right, this wouldn't be a renegotiation, but if you're taking a new job, you might have recruitment incentives that go along with that. So signing bonuses, you know, student loan forgiveness maybe. And those things have strings attached to them usually. So you need to know if you're paying that back, at what rate, and, you know, how, what the amortization looks like. So that's important. But then the other things that are probably more important to most clients are, one, they want to be paid fairly. So we have to hit on that. But then two, their duties and responsibilities are usually where people burn out. So they're taking more call than they think they should, or, you know, they don't have the staff that they were supposed to be allocated. They're working a different location, right? A satellite that they were promised they would never have to go to, and now they're driving out there once a week. You know, those things cause a lot of physicians to start to look, right, for a new position down the road if those things aren't honored. And so we just think it's important to get clarity on that and to make sure the language is structured to allow for some flexibility, but also protect the individual physician.
How frequently should physicians be reviewing their employment contract terms?
Well, if you're talking about compensation, I mean, that data changes annually, right? And so, you know, we've had clients that have come in and said, hey, I haven't, you know, haven't really pulled the contract out of the drawer for the last decade, and I just wanted to get kind of a review to see what this looks like. And they'll find out that they're short, you know, maybe six figures from what the market is currently. And that's pretty upsetting to them, as opposed to if you do it on an annual basis, you're going to have a better idea of, you know, maybe it went up 2% and you're fine, you leave it alone. If it jumps 10 or 15%, which can happen in some specialties, you know, right now, anesthesiology, radiology, I mean, there's a few specialties that are in extremely high demand where the market surveys are behind. So You look at job postings and job offers and the real contracts that you're going to see on our site, they're going to be dramatically higher than any median you see from the survey, because the market has shifted more frequently than that surveys come out. And so we think every year is important to take a peek at it. As far as renegotiating it, you know, usually it's on a kind of 18 months to 24 month schedule is pretty normal.
Do you see younger physicians being more interested in quality of life issues, time off, limited call, those type of things than older physicians?
I think it depends. So I actually think it's not necessarily an age issue of older versus younger. I think it's more on practice type. So if you're going into a private practice where you're going to be an owner at some point, you're going to, you know, have real estate, you're going to have a surgery center, you're going to have, you know, whatever it is, employees that you're taking care of, and you're sharing in the ups and the downs, we find that it's pretty much the same, right? Regardless of age on that. If you're talking about going into a health system or an employed setting, academic setting, something that's owned by private equity where you don't have any upside long-term, clients are much more focused on protecting themselves in those situations because they know they'll never have the ability to control it. And I think that makes sense, right? I mean, you're taking on more risk as an employee of what your job looks like day in and day out, as opposed to being an owner long-term. And so in those employed settings, yes, things like call are really important. Things like, you know, do I have the right office space? Do I have the support staff I need? Because there's no promise that the current administration is even going to be there 2 or 3 years from now, right? I mean, we know administrators move around just like physicians do. And so getting your contract right really protects you long-term.
Let's talk a minute about private equity, because that's, a relatively hot topic in the healthcare space. Do you find unique issues arising in employment agreements when dealing with entities that are controlled by private equity firms?
I don't know that the issues are different. I mean, the same core pieces that you're trying to solve for, right, are there in almost any setting. The thing that we see with organizations that are partially or fully owned by private equity, because you can have a mix on that, is the goals of private equity are pretty clear, right? Their job is to consolidate, their job is to expand margins, and then their job usually is to flip, right, the asset in 5 to 10 years, right? Sometime in that time frame. And so what we often see is that base guarantees are, you know, consistent with the market, but things like the production bonuses, there's a lot of margin there that they're trying to squeeze out. So, and maybe less flexible, because not only does the physician need to have, right, some of that profit, but then the private equity institution also has to capture that to show that they're making the right gains. And so that's not fault on their end necessarily. I mean, that's what they're geared to do. That's their job. But it also means if you're a physician going into that setting, you need to be well aware of that and careful on, you know, what you're willing to accept.
It is certainly all about extraction when it comes to private equity, I think. Tell me, what's the best way for a physician to have leverage and negotiate the best contractual terms for him or herself?
Well, we have a lot of experience in this, and we see a lot of different candidates come through. And the ones that we think are best geared toward getting the outcomes that they want are the ones that have multiple offers within a fairly tight geographic area, or at least consistent employer setting. Sometimes if you're really wanting to be in academics, right, you're going to have a geographic area that's wider, but you can still have academic institutions that are roughly there. But if you have 2 or 3 good offers and you're willing to say, okay, if I don't get this term changed, I've got a really good option B, they're much more willing to push, as opposed to the clients that come in that say, hey, this is hometown, I've already signed a letter of intent, I've already put an offer down on a house, I have to be there, and now let's negotiate the contract, right? And you're like, well, they know you're coming, right? So there's really no reason for them to make these changes. And I think sometimes physicians forget that it still is a business, right? Mm. And whether it's a health system or private equity or academics, they still want to keep their employment costs as low as they can.
Absolutely. So this is clearly an important topic to lots of our audience today. Is our time together comes to a close. Kyle, can you please tell our audience how they can contact you?
Yeah, my suggestion would be to just go to resolve.com. That you're going to find good educational information. There's some free tools you can utilize. You can access compensation information. You can get connected with expert attorneys in this area. So if it's something you haven't looked at in a while, you need to do that kind of mid-career review, or if you know you're moving and you've got a couple offers, we'd love to work with you.
Excellent. My guest has been Kyle Clausen. Kyle, thank you for being on Sound Practice.
I appreciate you having me.
My thanks to Kyle Clausen. His insights and experience help physicians negotiate fair compensation and favorable employment terms. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpracticepodcast.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpracticepodcast.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org.
That is holy cow, Batman and Robin, Ritual Kapow.